I think this is your second meeting, right? So you already know something. But I still want to start at the beginning, okay? So, you know, there is this one, and it's called a knot. And there is this one, and it's also called a knot. But this one is simpler than that one. And we ask ourselves if this is, if they're the same or not. And this is actually a rather hard question to prove that they're not the same, because I mean, what does same mean? Same means that you can deform one and get it to the other without the lines crossing each other, right? I mean, you've seen this. So, I mean, maybe you can deform this until it's extremely complicated and then undo it in a different way and it will come out to be that way. It's not at all obvious that this can't be done. And it's actually so hard that people confuse it to think that this is the only problem in knot theory. There are many other problems. There are many other properties of knots. There are many other questions you can ask about knots. But still, for today, this is the problem. Okay? So what's the solution? Or this is sort of the motivating problem. So what's the solution? The solution is to find a so-called knot invariant. So something you can compute given a picture of the knot relatively easily, and that has values in some place where you can detect equality rather easily. So like polynomials, real numbers, matrices, something. So again, you should be able to compute it easily, has values in a place where it's easy to tell things apart, and has the properties that it is invariant. So if you compute it on different presentations of the same things, so if you compute it on, say, this picture, which is topologically the same as that one, you get the same answer. And then suppose you had such an invariant, and when you computed it on this knot, the value was 1. And when you computed it on this knot, the value was 1 plus z squared. I don't know, suppose the invariant is with values in polynomials. Well, these two polynomials are not the same, therefore these two knots are also not the same. Now, there are lots and lots of invariants. There is the Conway polynomial, the Alexander polynomial, the Jones polynomial, the Homfield polynomial, the Kaufman polynomial, the Linx-Gould polynomial, the, God, I'm forgetting, I mean, lots, the many polynomials without names, the G2 polynomial, I don't know what else. Then there is the fundamental group, maybe you talked about it last time. There are coloring invariants, maybe you talked about them. I don't know, maybe you didn't. There are the hyperbolic volume. There is a whole zoo of invariants. And often what you do in a knot theory class is you go over them one by one and talk a little bit about each one. Say how powerful or not powerful they are. Which one is stronger? Oh, I forgot Hovanov homology. God, how could I forget that? Anyway, but I'm going to do something else today. I want to talk about the theory of all invariants, in a way. Okay? But not quite all invariants, but only polynomial invariants. But polynomial, not in the sense that's on the blackboard. The invariants that I used here, I actually didn't even tell you how to compute it. I didn't tell you what it is. Maybe we will get to it later. But this is an invariant with values in polynomials. For every knot, you get a polynomial. But I want to think about something else. I want to think about invariants with values in numbers, okay? But that look like they are polynomials on the space of knots. So, you know, you know what a polynomial on Rn looks like, right? It's, what does it look like? I don't know, it has a graph, but it doesn't grow up too quickly like the exponential function. And it has various other, like, simple properties, like, if you have a polynomial of degree n, if you differentiate it n plus 1 times, you get 0. So, I'm looking for something like that on the space of knots. Okay? So, that's the end of my introduction. And my goal for today is study polynomial knot invariants, but again, not polynomial, not in the sense that the values are polynomials, but that they are polynomials. So study polynomials on the space of knots. Okay. So, am I okay? Am I speaking in your language? I mean, is this... I mean, okay, good. So, okay, definition. So, a preliminary definition. Let V be a... So, you know what? Let me be completely silly. And a real value... invariant of oriented knots. So what's an oriented knot? Well, the way I drew this knot, it's not oriented. An oriented knot is if the line also has an orientation. Okay? In oriented space. What does oriented space means? It means that there is a different distinction, like that if you take the mirror image of space, you regard it as a different space. Or said differently, you know, what does space look like? It looks like this. So it has a bottom left corner somewhere far away. In the bottom left corner, somebody puts a picture of a right hand. So that you know what's a right hand, and if you take a mirror image, you know it's a different space. Okay, so an oriented space is a space along with a picture in it of a right hand. Okay? Or said differently, so, you know, since this is supposed to be in the corner, it was supposed to be in the bottom left, I'll put it in the upper right, what does it mean to be oriented? It means that there is a distinction between this crossing and that crossing. And what's the distinction? So this is a so-called right-handed crossing. Why right-handed? Because if you hold the top strand such that if you grab it with your hand, such that your orange fingernails are pointing in the direction of the flow, then the other fingers, sorry, the orange thumb is pointing in the direction of the flow, then the other fingers are pointing in the direction of the flow of the lower strand. And in fact, this was not dependent on which one is lower and which was upper, because if I held the lower strand in the same manner, still my fingers will be pointing the way the upper strand is flowing. So this is called a right-handed crossing, and this, in which the same thing would hold except with the left hand, is called a left-handed crossing. Okay? And being the bigots that we are, being completely unfair, you know, we put north in the north, we sort of like right more than we like left, because most people are right-handed, We call this one a positive crossing, and we call this one a negative crossing. Okay? Good. So, I just told you what's oriented space. It's a space in which you can tell the difference between the two crossings. Okay? Anyway, let V such an invariant. I claim that it extends to so-called one singular knots, and instead of defining what's a one singular knot, I'll define and tell you how it extends in the same line via the formula V of a singularity. So a one singular knot is a knot that is allowed to have one singularity. Okay, so one place where it crosses itself. And, well, I indicate it by a bullet, okay, in the middle. So, if you have a knot with a double point or a singularity, there are two ways you can resolve it. You can, right, if the two things cross, you can break them apart so as they will become a positive crossing. So you can turn this into that, or you can turn this into the other way around, right? And you can compute V. So V was defined or not. This or not. This is not a knot. But both of these things now are knots. Okay? Or really what I mean is, again, the convention is that I draw only the part of the picture that I care about. Really, this continues somehow. I mean, this is a part of a picture of a whole knot. But if I modify this, or a whole singular knot, and if I just modify the neighborhood of this double point, I can turn it into a non-singular knot in two ways. This way and that way. Now, I can evaluate V on each of these and take the difference. So take the positive one with plus sign and the negative one with minus sign and call it the value of that. Is it clear? Good. Now, derivatives are just glorified differences. Right? What's the derivative? The derivative of f with respect to x, how does the formula go? It's f of x plus h minus f of x. So you basically take the difference of the values of h, of f, at two neighboring points, and, well, then you renormalize. And then maybe you take a limit, I don't know, so you take, okay? But basically derivatives are differences. They measure the difference in the values in two neighboring points. It makes sense to think of the two knots that you have here as neighboring, right? If this knot had 1,000 crossings and one double point, then these two would differ in just a tiny bit. So maybe it was fair to call this V prime rather than V. Okay? I could have called it V prime, the derivative. But, you know, I'm lazy and I don't write the prime because you can tell it's V prime because you're evaluating it on one singular knot instead of on a knot. So, I mean, if you want, you can put the prime. If you don't have to. Okay? Anyway, the moment you have derivatives, you can iterate them. So, maybe I'll just continue it. Likewise, we can define V up M, so the mth derivative of naught. Of a knot invariant, and this will be a function on m singular nodes with values in the real numbers, like I had here. Okay? And it will be defined by Vm of. So, it, you have to evaluate it on n singular nodes. So, assume you have m double points. So, what you do is you pick one of them and resolve it, and keep the rest. And then if you get two possibilities, and you feed those two possibilities into the n minus first derivative. So this is by definition equal to v up n minus 1 of the first double point replaced by an overcrossing and all the rest stay in place minus vm minus 1 of the first double point replaced by an undercrossing or a negative crossing and all the rest stay in place. And of course, all of these pictures are symbolic, right? This stands for a big knot with n double points that are connected in some way, and this stands for the same one but with one double point replaced, and so on. Now, you can complain, is it well defined? Namely, well, I mean, I took this double point and resolved it. What if I had taken this one or another one? Okay? So, in other words, or said differently, if you want to reach V up M from V, you have to start resolving the double points one by one. You have to choose an order by which to resolve the double points. Is the end result independent of the order you choose? So, I have two answers. So, I have two answers. So, answer number one, well, this is like asking, suppose you have a polynomial in Rn and you differentiate, or a function on Rn, and you differentiate it n times, does it matter in which order you differentiate? And the answer is no, it doesn't matter, because there is a rule saying that partial derivatives commute. Right? So the answer is yes, as partial derivatives commute. So, by the way, why do partial derivatives commute in Rn? So, or in R2, let's do a simple case. So suppose you want to compute the derivative with respect to x of the derivative with respect to y. So you want to compute the derivative with respect to x of the derivative with respect to y of a function f at a point here. What's the derivative with respect to y? It's really, you take this with a point which is a little bit above, with sine plus, and this point with sine minus. Right? And then you want to take the derivative of this with respect to x. So this means that you have to take the this of a point which is a bit to the right with sine plus minus the this of that point. But that turns this plus into a minus and this minus into a plus. So the second derivative is really an evaluation of the function at four different points with signs as follows. Okay? And you've seen this, I'm sure, right? I mean, it's proven in calculus in first year or second year. First or second?
Both.
Okay. But, you know, in calculus, you have to be very, very careful, because there is also a limiting procedure here, and you have to take the limit with respect to h and the limit with respect to the other h, and maybe they commute, maybe they don't commute. It's a whole mess. But at least the picture is clear. I mean, if you do the exact same logic But doing the derivatives in the opposite order, you still get the exact same sum of 4 points. And then there is analysis. After that, it's analysis. But the geometry is this. The same is true here. If you want to resolve 2 double points, it doesn't matter in which order you do it, you will get the same, so you compute in two ways, and in both cases you get a sum of 4 terms, and they turn out to be the same no matter in which order you do it. Okay? And, okay, the second point about it being well-defined is that you can just write a formula for the end result. Namely, you can write Vm of m double points is equal to, so this is m, is equal to, oh my god, how do you write this? So, you write the sum over all choices of m signs, so over all choices c belongs to plus minus to the power m, where, and then you take v, the original v, evaluated on the first double point replaced by c1. The second double point replaced by C2, and so on, up to the nth double point replaced by Cm, and this corresponds to the sum of these points, but I forgot to insert the signs. Right, there are signs. The signs are precisely the product of the signs here, so times the product of the Ci. Okay, and you can check, you can prove this formula by induction, and it's clearly independent of the ordering of the points. Are you with me? Good. So I have just enough space for a definition. So, definition, an invariant V is of type M, or finite type of type M, or Vasiliev of type M, or Gusarov-Vasiliev of type M, depending how you view history. So V is called of type M if it is like a polynomial of degree M. So if V, differentiated M plus 1 times, is identically equal to 0. Meaning that if you take V and evaluate it on a knot with m plus 1 double points or more, I mean, if you get more, it's clearly still going to be 0, then you get 0. So these are the invariants I want to study. Okay? Good. A few questions, a few comments. So, first of all, I was silly about being about the real numbers. The real numbers are for like undergrads. I mean, who cares about the real numbers? I mean, really, the only thing I needed here was being able to add with signs. So, if you know anything about abelian groups, I could have used any abelian group throughout. So, A is any abelian group. Okay? If you don't know about abelian, I don't know what am I allowed to use. But if you don't know abelian groups, then you can say Z, Q, anything where there is addition and subtraction in it commutes. So, the natural numbers, the rational numbers, polynomials, there are lots of options. Okay? And the definition still makes sense. Okay? And, okay, so that's one comment. And the second comment is, well, polynomials, well, with polynomials you can approximate arbitrary functions. Okay? So, it's fair to imagine, it's only fair to imagine, that with polynomial invariants of knots, you will be able to approximate arbitrary invariants of knots. Now, arbitrary invariants of knots clearly separate knots, because you can take you can just declare that an invariant is one on the trefoil and zero everything else, and then it separates the trefoil from everything else. I mean, it would be an extremely difficult invariant to compute. I mean, how would you compute it on a big picture? How would you know if it's the trefoil or not? But mathematically speaking, I mean, it's a meaningful definition. Okay? So, if you could approximate an arbitrary invariant with finite type invariants or with polynomial invariants, it's fair to assume that finite type invariants separate knots. Okay? So, finite or polynomial, so finite type or polynomial invariants separate knots. Now, the status of this statement is that it is a conjecture, and it's a very difficult conjecture. We have no idea, no reasonable approach. Okay? But what we do know, so we don't know if this is true, okay? But we do know, is that, well, maybe they don't separate knots, but we do know that finite type invariants are very powerful. And now I'm not being specific, but I can tell you that you can, you know, if you tabulate all knots up to however far they were tabulated, in as much as I know, finite type invariants separate. To the extent that it's been tabulated. I mean, okay? So, we do know that. So that should be a good motivation to study finite type invariants. Okay? But the next question is, how many are there? Well, I mean, here I sort of imply that there are plenty. But let's start looking for them. Okay? So, question, how many are there? Okay, or probably infinity, but maybe if you bound the degree by 7, if you look at invariants of type less than or equal to 7, well, even then it will be infinitely many, because clearly the sum of two such things is again such a thing. Right, this is a linear condition. But then you can ask, so really you should interpret how many by what's the dimension of the vector space of finite type invariants. So, said differently, let Vm, so this is calligraphic V as opposed to ordinary V, be the set of all V of type M. And then the question is, what is the dimension of Vn? Okay? And let's start going towards that. Okay? So, how do we do that? So, well, one way of classifying polynomials is to do the following. Suppose you wanted to understand what are all polynomials on Rn. So, if you differentiate a polynomial of degree m, m plus 1 times, you get 0. Okay? Which means that if you differentiate it just n times, you get a constant. Which means that each polynomial defines a system of constants which depend on which directions you choose to differentiate, which m directions you chose in order to differentiate. Right? Now, what did I want to say? Yeah, so I want to imitate this. Sorry. But in these constants, these constants do not determine the polynomial. But if two polynomials have the same nth derivatives, then the difference between them is a polynomial of degree one less. Right? Which you can assume that you've studied yesterday by induction. So on day zero, you study polynomials of degree zero. On day one, you study polynomials of degree one, and so on. So it's enough to look at those these systems of constants if you're willing to use induction. Oh, so maybe before that, what's a type zero invariant? So a type zero invariant, if I have to base the induction. So a type zero invariant is an invariant whose first derivative is equal to zero. If its first derivative is equal to zero, it just means that its value on an overcrossing is equal to its value on an undercrossing. But that means that you can flip all the crossings until you can, without changing the invariant, until you undo the knot. So the invariant, so the invariant is constant. So in our sense, polynomials of degree zero are constants, just as you would expect. Okay. But anyway, so the strategy is clear. I want to understand Vm by understanding the nth derivatives. And the nth derivatives should be constants. Well, in what sense are they constant? So suppose V is of type M, and I want to evaluate I'm not sure how to do it. Well, okay. I want to evaluate it on a knot with M double points. Right? That is the nth derivative. Okay? But now suppose there was an additional crossing and it was an overcrossing. And now suppose that I switch this crossing to be an undercrossing. So I'm looking at V of this minus V of the same m double points, and this point replaced by an undercrossing. Okay? But you see, this difference, by definition, is V evaluated on that last point replaced by a double point, but now you have M plus one double points, and I took a V which is of type M, so I get zero. Okay? The moral from this is that if V is of type M, then V up M, the nth derivative, does not change when you flip crossings. So what can it depend on? What can it depend upon? Okay? So suppose you have a note with, say, two double points. What does it look like? Here is a note with two double points. And suppose I'm looking at an invariant of type 2. Okay? So that invariant, when evaluated on this note, will not change if I flip this crossing from what it was to the other way around. It will also not change if I will, I don't know, take a little thing out of here and add a little kink connecting it to here. Because I can undo it by flipping crossings, and the invariant doesn't change when I flip crossings because it already has two double points. So what does it left to depend on? It basically does not depend on the topology of the embedding. It doesn't depend on how this thing is placed on R3, because you can get from any one placement to another by switching crossings. But it does. But there is one thing that remains. And the one thing is the following. Suppose you are an ant. So here, you are an ant. And you walk on this strand. So when you walk on this strand, you go through this double point, and you put a little marker that you've been there. You print one on it. Okay? And then you go through this point, you print two, and then you continue walking and you go back through one and back through two, and the order by which you come back to the points cannot be changed by flipping crossings. Flipping crossings is, the crossings are irrelevant. The ant doesn't even see them. It's a very low, it's a very short, very small ant. Okay? So, said differently, if you have an M singular knot, you can assign to it a so-called M chord diagram. And what is an M chord diagram? Well, you take the parameter space of a knot, and it is a circle, and you pretend that the ant, or I mean, the ant only sees this, right? It only sees a circle. It doesn't see how the circle is placed in R3. So you mark this circle as the ant would have marked it. Namely, you mark one, then you mark two, then you mark one again, and then you mark two again. But this really means that 2 is connected to 2 and 1 is connected to 1. Or said differently, when the ant is here, it's in the same place in R3 as when it is here. Or the two ends of a chord, so this is a chord, any one of these edges, lines, is a chord. And the two ends of a chord are mapped to the same point in R3 via the map of the knot of the circle to the knot, right? And of course, the naming of the double points is immaterial. What matters is the geometry of the picture of the chord diagram. So, example: here is another two singular knot. Sorry, what do I want to do? Here is another two singular knot. What's the chord diagram corresponding to this one? So, if I start here, I go 1, 1, 2, 2. So the chord diagram corresponding to it is, well, 1 to 1, 2 to 2, and it's a different chord diagram than that one. Okay? Good. So, the moral is, V up M, also sometimes called, so this is sometimes called W of V, or the weight system of V. So W stands for weight system. So this is really a function on M chord diagrams with values in the abelian group that we chose before. So, you know, if you want, you can call it A. If you want, you can call it the real numbers. I don't care. Okay? And this weight system doesn't quite determine the knot, but it determines the knot up to knots of type of type 1 less. Okay? So, in other words, the dimension of Vm minus the dimension of Vm minus 1, or, you know, if you're fancy types, you will call it the dimension of Vm modulo Vm minus 1. Okay? But anyway, the dimension of Vm minus 1 is equal, I'm telling lies, you can see on my face, is equal to the dimension of the space of functions from M chord diagrams to R. So it's equal to the number of M chord diagrams. Okay? And this is a finite number. So, there are only finitely many invariants of any given type. Are you still with me? Is it okay? Where did I lie? I lied in an important place. Look, the nth derivative is a functional on chord diagrams. But I don't know that every functional on chord diagrams comes from an invariant. There may be lots of functionals on chord diagrams that don't come from invariants. So in fact, this isn't an equality, it's an inequality. I know that there are at most that many. Okay? But that's fine. I mean, this is a finite number. Being less than a finite number, you're still a finite number. But, you know, I mean, for all I know, I mean, I don't know if there are, I don't really know how many there are. Okay? So, that's a good point for a break. Should we take a break or should we continue?
Yeah. Break is good.
Yeah.
Okay, so how long? 5 minutes?
Sure.
Okay, good. Okay, 5 minutes break.
I should stop the camera as well.
Yeah, you should stop the camera.